Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. They are plans for good and not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope. In those days when you pray, I will listen. If you look for me wholeheartedly, you will find me. I will be found by you, says the Lord. I will end your captivity and restore your fortunes. I will gather you out of the nations where I sent you, and I will bring you home again to your own land. Well, that is Jeremiah 29, verses 11 through 14. I am your host, Sandra Flack. Thank you for joining me today for episode number 245 of Orphans No More. Many of you are foster and adoptive parents like me, and also like me, you're having to navigate a crazy school year due to all of the changes brought on by COVID-19. Parenting through a pandemic has been a common theme for the past 8 months on this podcast and everywhere, really, right? Social media, everywhere. We're living it every day in our homes. Maybe you feel like you're living in a disaster zone, just trying to survive. But God promises us that his plans for us are good and they're full of hope. And even it's true even when, you know, it doesn't feel like it, right? Our job is to pray wholeheartedly, and we will find him and the answers he provides. And whew, since school shut down last March, my youngest son has struggled with anxiety and stress and fear of the unknown. If you're a regular listener to this podcast, you've heard me talk almost every episode, you know, something going on involving our son and the way that this was impacting him. And when school unexpectedly shut down and then didn't reopen, his world spun out of control. At least that's how it felt to him. And him and so many other children, especially those with trauma histories, and as my friend Kathleen Guire calls them, capital letter syndromes like ADD, ADHD, FASD, SPD, and so on. These kids are especially struggling. All kids in one way or another are having a little bit of a hard time, but you know, for our kids, it's especially so. And when school reopened in September, my son's stress levels just through the roof, right, increased. He had a lot of fears over wearing a mask and over the unknown. And we were trying to prepare him for the changes because he needs to know in advance what's coming. But the more we talked about it, it seemed the more stressed out he got. And then the actual reopening brought a lot of change, an extremely modified schedule. And it depends on where you live. It depends on your state, your school district, and all of that. Our school district has reopened with just this very, very different, complicated schedule, complicated for parents, for teachers, and especially for students. Very crazy. Masks, you know, happen to be wearing at all times. In-person schooling was even now being done on a Chromebook. Our district uses Chromebooks. So even the kids who are in the classroom are having to use the Chromebook for everything, all of that screen time. No time in the cafeteria, no PE or other normal activities. And by the time I picked him up at the end of each day, I was picking him up every day, bringing him and picking him up because really, to avoid him having to wear a mask where we live, you know, outside of town. So it would be a 30-minute bus ride or so. And I didn't want him to have that extra time on with a mask on. So I was bringing him in the morning and picking him up at the end of the day. It was a shortened day, you know, which maybe was a good thing because when I would pick him up, he was so overstimulated and stressed out. I had to take him straight home where he'd go to his room, listen to music, rock on his bed, and he would stay in there until we dragged him out for dinner or for just to try to get him to do some chores or play a game or go outside or do something. He just wanted to hide out in his room. Like that was his safe space, is where he felt the most comfortable, and he was trying to really decompress from, you know, the craziness at school. He was holding it together okay at school, but when I would pick him up, he would say things like, my head can't keep doing this. I can't keep looking at this screen, or, you know, I this hurts my head. And he just was so stressed and overstimulated. We were, you know, paying for it at home, but he was paying for it even more so. So I monitored his stress level and his behavior, and listened to everything that he was saying for 7 weeks, that first 7 weeks of school being opened. And then that brought us to last week on episode 244 of this show. I shared about our decision to homeschool. It seemed in a way like it was a sudden decision, but actually we were leading up to it. During that episode last week, we talked with Kathleen Guire about homeschooling children with special needs and trauma. So if you didn't get an opportunity to listen to episode 244 of the Orphans No More podcast, go back and listen to that. It's full of just some help and encouragement for foster and adoptive families who are embarking on homeschooling, whether you're doing it through your district, you know, remote learning, or if you're full on homeschooling the traditional homeschooling way, which is what we opted to do. So you'll want to check that out. It wasn't, we were leading up to it. I'll share a little bit more here shortly, but finally a week home, and we made that decision because we recognized he took a few days off for a mental health break from school, which is what he really needed. But the longer he was home, the more improvement we saw. And then when we were prepping him to go back, that's when he really melted down, and it became very apparent that it was just too much for him. Now, since about 70% of children in the United States foster care system have been exposed to alcohol in the womb, and according to families affected by FASD, and that website is FASD.org. They have a list of 50 facts, and actually you can go to their website. I'll post the link in the show notes. Then not only do they provide the facts in short list form, they also have a breakdown. So it's like a fact per page. It's like 50 pages worth of facts, but very, very good. But according to FASD, 2 to 5% of babies born in the United States have FASD. And we could expect similar statistics, I believe, with children adopted internationally. FASD plays a huge role in the lives of most foster and adoptive families and schools where kids attend, whether they're attending in person or remotely or homeschooled or whatever. FASD is a much more prominent diagnoses and disability than we even can believe. I mean, it was eye-opening a year ago when I learned 70% of kids in foster care have been exposed to alcohol in the womb. That tells me that every foster parent or potential foster parent going through the foster parent training classes absolutely must have training, an education about FASD, and then continued education on that. And it's not necessarily the case. I know in some places, like I believe it's the state of Minnesota now has made that part of their mandatory in their training for foster parents, but that is not the case everywhere. So it is crucial for foster parents especially to understand and research and learn more about FASD. In episode 243, I spoke with Laura Passant, a New York foster and adoptive parent with 5 children adopted through foster care, all with FASD. And on that episode, so back to 243, I shared some FASD facts, again, from the FASD website. So if you have a child with FAS or an FASD diagnosis, or if you maybe suspect or you're wondering, you know, does my child maybe have this? If you're searching for answers, if you're just wondering, why does my kid act like this? Why are we having such struggles? I highly recommend visiting the FASD.org website and also listen to some FASD podcasts. I listen to regularly FASD Success podcast and FASD Hope podcast. FASD Hope is a podcast hosted by Natalie Vecchione. She is an adoptive mom with a child with an FASD diagnosis and a wealth load of information there. So educate yourself, and you can listen to a podcast. Maybe that's how you're listening to this one. Of course, we want you to listen to Orphans No More. We don't just solely focus on FASD, but we do focus on, you know, really whatever is relevant for adoption and foster care and parenting and so on. So you need to educate yourself. So I listen when I drive. I listen while I'm taking a shower. I listen to podcasts while I'm putting on my makeup and getting dressed and folding laundry. And anytime I can have, you know, an opportunity to just be listening, because it just, I've learned so much, and it's such an easy way to take in information. So you really want to, you know, start doing that research. In episode 243, I also shared the first five facts from the FASD.org website. Today, I'm going to share some more and some stories from our adoption journey. I also want to remind everybody that November is National Adoption Awareness Month. It's also the month we observe Orphan Sunday. So I want to make sure that everybody's aware of that, and you can find some great information on our social media. We're really going to be focusing on those things throughout the month of November. But first, I always like to start off by asking how you are doing. I know that a lot of our listeners are foster and adoptive parents in the trenches. I am right there in the trenches with you. How are you doing? How are your kids doing? I want to know. I would love to hear from you. I want to know if you're listening, if you've gotten any hope, any encouragement, any help from listening to this podcast. You can contact us on our social media at Justice for Orphans. We're on Facebook and Instagram. And we're also, you can reach us through our website, justicefororphansny.org. You can email me directly. My email is my name, Sandra Flack, F as in Frank, L-A-C-H. JFO@gmail.com. And JFO is like Justice for Orphans. Sandra Flack, JFO@gmail.com. So please reach out to me. I would love to hear from you. I want to know how you're doing. How are your kids doing as you navigate this time? Do you have questions? Do you need some help? Do you maybe want to tell your story on this podcast, or you want to recommend a family or an individual who you feel would make a great guest on this show? I want to hear from you. You know, our mission on this podcast is to encourage and inspire you for your journey. And we want to hear from you. So please feel free to reach out. Now, I opened with Jeremiah 29, verses 11 through 13, 11 through 14. I love these verses. I need to be reminded that God has a plan, right? A plan for my life, a plan for each of my kids, a plan for you, a plan for your kids. This is not just a verse to be put on a graduation card and given out in June. God has a plan for us, and it is a good plan, a plan to prosper us, not to harm us, a plan for a hope and a future. And as I watched my son struggle over the past months, I prayed fervently to God. I sought answers, and I told the Lord, I will do whatever you want me to do. I want to be obedient. If you want us to homeschool him and take him out of school, we will do that. If he's supposed to stay in school, he will do that. I just wanted to know what the right thing was to do, because I didn't want to make a move that would be detrimental and harmful to my son. See, we homeschooled for 16 years. I graduated 6 kids from homeschooling. And my vision back then was I was going to do like homeschooling for like all of our kids for always and forever. And that was going to be it. And my kids would never set foot in a public school. But 4 years ago, we did put our youngest 2 in school. We were just at a completely different place in life. Our, you know, especially our youngest son, you know, I was running him to occupational therapy and speech therapy and vision therapy. And we were spending more time running than we were spending at home, actually doing school. Both of the boys needed one-on-one from me to do their schoolwork. So that was very time consuming. It didn't always work well to have them both sitting at the table together at the same time, because, you know, even just regular siblings don't always get along because somebody's breathing the wrong way or blinking the wrong way or something. So it was just crazy. And I just really felt like the last 2 years that we did homeschool, I felt like a complete failure. We just were not accomplishing what we needed to accomplish. Life was crazy. I knew it wasn't working. And I feel like looking back, the writing was on the wall, you know, so to speak, but God was leading us to put our boys in school. And it took practically an audible voice from God to know that that is what he wanted us to do at that time. So, you know, with much fear and trepidation, we obeyed and put the boys in school. We found out that our school district has a wonderful special education program. They thrived. Everything was going great. I was never looking back at homeschooling again. My daughter-in-law last year was homeschooling my granddaughter, who was kindergarten age. And then her intention was to put her in school for first grade, but she wanted some help. She just had a baby. They have 4 little ones. It was crazy. And I knew they were looking at me like, you know, you're going to help us homeschool, right? And I just like broke out in hives at the thought of homeschooling. And I did. I love my granddaughter, love all my grandkids. And I did take her on Friday afternoons and spend a couple hours and did some reading and math with her. And it was our special Mimi and me kind of time together. So I did do that, but I had no intention of homeschooling my boys again. They were thriving. Everything was great until COVID, right? COVID turned everything upside down for, I think, all of us. And so that was last March. And, you know, that was a very difficult time with my son. And then as we went through the summer, I was just praying that school would reopen. It did reopen, but since August, really, I started to pray about, you know, is this going to be good for my youngest son? And at times I sensed God moving us toward homeschooling, at least for my youngest. Our oldest, out of our two youngest boys that are school age, one is 17. He's a senior. He's in a BOCES program where he goes for welding. So he needs to finish that. And he was doing fine. He wasn't really affected. It just did not hit him as hard as it did our youngest son, who's 15, but in 8th grade. He's in a special education classroom and he works at his own level. I mean, he's only at a second grade reading level, really, able to work at his own pace. So he was thriving, and he needed that structure and the guided social things that I didn't believe that I could provide for him at home. And he loved school every day. Practically every morning as he was getting ready for school prior to COVID, he would say things like, I am so thankful I get to go to school. I am so excited to go to school today. Like that was an expression that he said almost every morning for the 3 years he was in school until COVID. And I did not want to take that from him. You know, besides, I thought, why would God call us to put them into school only to turn around and take them out? You know, but I couldn't deny, you know, God was doing some things. He kept leaving me these breadcrumbs, like, a trail to follow, like unexpected connections with FASD parents who homeschooled. FASD podcast that I was listening to, I was hearing stories of how kids with FASD thrive in the homeschool environment. I got invited to join an FASD homeschool group on Facebook. I didn't even know such groups existed. I did make one decision because I felt like, okay, I can, you know, appease God this way. If school were to shut down again, like it did back in March, then we would pull him out and full on, all in, homeschool him, because remote instruction would not work for us. He was having such a hard time with that, the little bit he was having to do of it. So making that decision that seemed like, you know, the safe, you know, I put my toe in the water kind of thing, I began to gather some curriculum because I homeschooled for 16 years, but I had sold or given away practically every, I mean, we still have like dictionaries and, you know, some things like that. And we have books to read, but I gave away curriculum. I didn't have any curriculum at all. So I started to gather some things together just in case school shut down. But I didn't want to make any sudden moves and cause my son more stress. But by the end of October, he was so stressed out. That's when I kept him home for a few days for, you know, what I call a mental health break. He was experiencing some allergy symptoms. He was, you know, sneezing. And I felt like, you know, because he would sneeze and say, oh, I got COVID. And I'm like, you cannot go to school and say that. Our district is, you know, very, there's a lot of people, you know, in the school, I want to say leadership, but it's not a church, but administration, that they're very fearful of COVID. So if he would go to school and sneeze and say that he had COVID, you know, I anticipated a phone call home and I didn't want to put him through a COVID test. So especially because I knew he didn't have it. He had some allergies. So I just kept him home. And after the first few days of being home, I noticed he seemed lighter. His mood was improved. He was happier. He was less stressed. And I, except for when we had to go on a couple of times, he went on for a virtual classroom call, you know, to do a couple of his classes that way. He was totally stressed out getting on, you know, getting into the Google Classroom Meet thing. And if the link didn't come up right away, and he just was so, you know, tense throughout that whole thing. It was crazy. And, you know, and I may have shared this last week when we were talking about this, you know, that Wednesday night, getting him ready for bed, fully anticipating putting, you know, sending him to school the next morning. I just said to him, how are you feeling? And I was thinking, you know, or do you still have, you know, itchy nose and eyes and sneezing? And I just said, how are you feeling? And he said, I feel so good. I don't have any stress. And I was like, whoa, because that is not what I was asking him, but that was the first thing that came out of his mouth. And, you know, my husband was standing right there. We were getting ready, you know, for bedtime prayers and all of that. And it was just like, whoa. So the next morning, he woke up and sneezed like 5 times. And I'm like, oh, forget it. Just go back to bed. And, you know, I talked to the school nurse. I did all these things, but I started realizing, you know, something's going on here, but we need to send him back, right? He's got to go back. He can't just stay out of school. So I, you know, we started that after dinner Thursday evening, started, you know, kind of preparing him for, okay, tomorrow you're going to go back to school. You've got to go back to school, you know, all of that. And that's when he had that meltdown. And, you know, and he was like, I can't keep doing this. This is hurting my head. My soul hurts. I am too. And he just, you know, had this, you know, episode. And my husband and I were like, okay, you know, we see clearly what needs to be done here. The next morning, Friday morning, I did wake him up for school. I just said, do you want to go in and see your friends? Because he loves his friends. You know, I thought maybe he'd be sort of over it and would just say, oh yeah, I'll go to school. And he was like, I can't do it. I can't do it. So we decided, okay, this is it. We know what we're going to have to do. We have our answer. So we've been homeschooling for a week, and my son is happier, less stressed, and we are both enjoying homeschooling. It's like he's a new kid again. He's, you know, he's improved. His one concern, he keeps asking if his friends at school are mad at him. So now I'm reaching out to some of the parents to see if we could set up a FaceTime or a Google Hangout kind of call where he can connect with them. You know, and really, I've been talking to some, you know, some people in our community, and everybody's kind of just thinking it's just a matter of weeks, just a couple of weeks before things may shut down. And then, you know, everybody will be home. And then, you know, we're already set. We're already rolling. We're already homeschooling. And it's this, I have to say, even myself, I feel less stressed today after a week of homeschooling than I did, than I have since March when he first came home and the kids were all home. And then even when we put him in school in September, I feel better. I feel a weight off of my shoulders, and I turned around and took on homeschooling. And to me, it's sort of easy now because even though I'm doing so many other things that I didn't used to do when I homeschooled, I'm only homeschooling one kid. So it's relatively easy to do. And it's fun, and we're having a great time, and we're focusing on life skills as well as the academic stuff that he has to do. So it is doable. As adoptive parents or foster parents, it is absolutely vital that we understand trauma and the impacts that it has on the brain and on brain development and on behavior. And exposure to alcohol in the womb is a trauma to an unborn baby. The effect varies by when, you know, when in the pregnancy, how often and how much an expectant mom drinks during her pregnancy. But since alcohol is absorbed into the bloodstream where it crosses the placenta, alcohol is one of the most, if not the most toxic substance to an unborn baby. And, you know, that's what we need to remember. We need to become experts on whatever diagnosis our kids have. We need to understand trauma. We need to understand whatever a diagnosis would be. We need to really do some research. And for me, you know, and maybe for you, FASD is something that I know that my husband and I, and our even our extended family members, that, you know, we need to understand it. And we know we need to know how to parent effectively so our kids can have success. So I'm going to share five more of those FASD facts. Again, these are from the FASD.org website. And you can even, you know, Google FASD.org/50facts, and you'll find them there. I went over the first five a couple of episodes ago, and I'm going to cover five now and kind of, you know, expound upon them a little bit with some of the, you know, life experience that we have in our home. But I would encourage you to check these out in depth. I will continue to talk about them in future episodes. We will post link in the webs in the show notes for this podcast and on our website. But let's get to FASD fact number six. Diagnosing and understanding of the disorder is key to avoiding poor outcomes for individuals with FASD. So now, as a parent or caregiver of someone with FASD, we or you have to understand, we have to research and learn and become our child's advocate. We can't rely on other professionals or school teachers, even if they're special education teachers, to understand FASD. We have to educate them. You know, in one parent teacher conference that I had with one of my son's teachers over, you know, the 3 years he was in public school, she brought up in the meeting his lack of impulse control, like it was something he should be able to control, you know? So when she said he has a problem with impulse control, my response was like, well, yeah, you know, like I didn't say duh, but that's what I was thinking. Of course, he has FASD, you know, like that's not going to just disappear. It's because of the way his brain is wired or damaged, right? Because of being exposed to alcohol. So it was then that I realized that just because a teacher is a special education teacher doesn't mean they know anything about FASD. They're certainly not experts on FASD. So it's up to parents to teach the teachers when we learn something, when we know something. It's vital that we understand it so that we can know. And we, because we want them to have better outcomes. And when you don't know, and we're going to, I don't want to jump ahead of myself, but when you don't know really what you're dealing with, we parent, and I've done this, I parented wrong for so many years. First, it was because I did not know, my husband and I did not know about trauma. When our first daughter came into our home, we weren't looking to adopt. We weren't, you know, we took in a child who was a relative who needed a home. And of course we would, you know, open our home to her and raise her as our own. And she would have all of the same privileges and expectations and opportunities and rules as our biological children. And we would live happily ever after because now she had a family, right? And that didn't work. That didn't work. And there was always challenges and issues and behavior problems. And we had no idea what we were dealing with. It wasn't until, you know, we did adopt her and then we went on to adopt four more children. And it wasn't until the youngest one came home that we began to learn about trauma. Because in the early days, when we first adopted, not after we adopted our oldest daughter, the one I'm referring to, the first one that came into our home, but then we adopted three more. And I learned about attachment because that was the buzzword, right? And that, you know, attachment is a very important thing. I don't mean to belittle that, but I didn't know about trauma and I didn't know anything about FASD. So we had a crash course on that, but you know, the way we parented and the lack of knowledge and understanding really, you know, I guess I could say I don't have any regrets except for I wish I knew way back then in 1999 what I know now, because I would have parented our daughter completely different, because I have a completely different parenting style now that I understand trauma and now that I understand FASD. So fact number seven, FASD fact number seven, accommodating a person's brain differences through environmental change, like lowering stimulation, like matching expectations to ability, like providing tools to aid memory, is just like accommodating a mobility impaired person by providing a wheelchair. But you see, FASD is an invisible disability. Behavioral differences are often the only symptoms, and people just don't understand. This is one of the reasons I believe why remote learning or being in a classroom and still stuck on a Chromebook does not work for kids with FASD. My son was overstimulated and stressed out. The expectations must be set to match a child's ability. And education is not a one-size-fits-all thing. Accommodations must be made. And we have to match expectations with ability. We want our kids to be able to experience success. It's so important. You know, that is one of my big takeaways from this whole pandemic, you know, thing is education is not one size fits all. And children across the country are being forced into these cookie cutter solutions that do not work. And it's causing more harm than COVID would ever cause them if they got COVID. That's my personal opinion right there. Okay. FASD fact number eight. One primary brain difference of FASD is slower processing speed. This might look like a person is responding slowly to requests, people with FASD might react and refuse a request, then think about it and comply. They might become overwhelmed with lots of talking or noise around them. They might say, huh, or what, a lot. It can look like ignoring, daydreaming, or opposition, but when given adequate time and understanding, it can be seen as the brain needing more time to process requests and directions. Strategies around slow processing. What would we do? What would be good strategies? Give time. Use fewer words. And that was a huge thing for me. One of our kids, who is now an adult, we adopted her many, many years ago. We had no idea, like I said back then, about trauma or FASD. She always appeared oppositional. I saw her as defiant and disobedient, rebellious, you know, and if you're a Christian parent, especially back in those days, you know, rebellion and obedience, disobedience, all of that stuff, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child. That's where, you know, that's where we were at. That was our skill set that we came to the table with, which was harmful. It was not helpful. It did not work. And so I was always clashing with my daughter. I didn't know she had slow processing. It's so important for us to know and understand these symptoms and the why behind it and the how to parent them accurately. It's so, so important. And I learned that with my kids, you know, with being able to slow down and use fewer words. I'm a woman of words. If you listen to this podcast, you probably have figured that out by now. So you get a lecture. If you're one of my kids and I'm telling you to do something or I'm telling you to not do something, you're going to get a lecture. Well, with these kids, maybe they heard the first three words you said, but they didn't hear the rest of it. Or maybe they only caught the last two words you said. I said, okay. So lecture. So I've learned fewer words, fewer steps, slow it down. It's vital. And it's kind of crazy when, you know, everybody's doing this remote learning or they're on these, their devices, these Chromebooks or iPads or whatever at school, it's harder. It's too many steps because you're trying to teach this math concept, but also they're on this computer. Now for some kids, it works. I know some kids who were adopted through foster care with FASD who are doing great with this remote learning thing because some of their challenges weren't so much with the executive function of it all, but with the social interactions. So being in school less has actually been better. So you have to know your kid and you have to understand their behavior and you have to research and understand and know trauma and these other things, the capital letter syndromes. And today we're specifically talking about FASD. Even what I'm saying is not one size fits all because it can be so different. I've got, you know, five adopted kids, you know, two have a diagnosis, the others do not. Out of the other three, maybe some a little bit of exposure, but it presents differently. Even my two youngest boys who have the diagnosis, completely different. One is doing totally fine in school, and then our youngest had to be home. So it's not a one size fits all either, because it just depends on how much a pregnant woman drank, at what stage in the pregnancy, how frequent. There's just no predictable, you know, pattern there. Just know that damage was done to the brain. So that's going to bring me to FASD fact number 9. One of the primary characteristics of FASD is difficulty with executive functioning. This means that organization, planning, transitioning, goal setting, self-modulation, and self-inhibition can be challenging. An important way to help a person who has executive function difficulties is to recognize that this is a brain-based behavior. It is not laziness or messiness or procrastination or immaturity, but it can look like those things. So I'm going to ask you, think about your kid's bedroom. Is it messy? do you find yourself fighting with them about cleaning it or keeping it clean? While this can seem to be a typical parent-child issue, right? For kids with FASD and their parents, it is definitely a challenge. My oldest daughter, again, who I didn't even realize was most likely FASD and not diagnosed, she ticked every box. As the more I learned about FASD, she definitely had trauma, but the more I learn about FASD, I'm convinced that it's a part of her story. But I didn't even know about those boxes to tick until, you know, years later, when learning now about FASD. But you can tell a kid with FASD to go clean their room, right? They're not going to clean it. It's not going to happen. Okay. I tried it. But an hour later, like with my daughter, like, go clean your room. You're not going to be able to go to your friend's house till you clean your room. An hour later, I'd find her sitting in the middle of the mess on the bedroom floor, engrossed in a book. She was a huge reader. But yet she never did any of the other things. She didn't clean. Like, there was still, you couldn't see the floor around her because it was covered with dirty laundry and toys and whatever she had out, and, you know, water glasses lined the dresser, and just, you know, she didn't clean it. And it was always an issue. And, you know, but now with my youngest two, I've learned to break the process down into smaller steps. So what I do now is, okay, bring me your dirty clothes. I'll be like standing in the hallway, and in our hallway is the doors to the bedrooms, but also the door to our laundry room. So if I just say to my son, bring me your dirty clothes, that's one step. It's very simple. He knows exactly what to do. He can bring me his dirty clothes. I don't say, pick up your dirty clothes, bring them here, put the clean clothes away, get the toys off the floor, make your bed. I can't say all of that because then nothing will get done. But I can give one simple direction to follow. And at the very least, if that's all we got done that day, at least the clothes were off the floor and the room already looked cleaner. Now, once that's accomplished and that task is complete, I could issue another task and say, you know, hand him a pile of clothing and say, put these away. But I don't leave him to that task by himself, because if I do, they may just end up on top of the dresser or on the floor mixed with the next day's dirty laundry. I walk him through the process. I'll go in his room and say, here, do you want to hang these up? Or do you want to put them, you know, put your socks in your drawer? Like, what are we going to do first? And have him kind of help and guide that. That's how we get the clean clothes put away, not bark them an order and expect it to be done. Just one task, one thing at a time. And they're much more successful with this strategy. And we're all happier. I had no idea back in the early days with my daughter that that's what I should have been doing. Instead, I was fighting with her and issuing consequences because she never did what I told her to do, and her room was always a mess, and so on and so forth. And it caused more harm than good. Anyway, our last fact for today, FASD fact number 10, sensory differences are a primary characteristic of FASD. Sensory seeking, that is my son, and sensory avoiding behaviors are common. Think picky behaviors around food, insensitivity to pain, oversensitivity to noise, or ramping up in response to sensory overload with difficulty in calming back down. So now my youngest is sensory seeking, and he has a very high pain tolerance. He also has a hard time calming down after sensory overload. This is why when I pick him up after school, those first 7 weeks when he was in school, between wearing the mask the whole time and focusing on a screen, he was overstimulated. He was just trying to hold it together. And by the time he got in the car to go home, he was done, fried. We had to go straight home. No running errands, no stopping at the store, nothing. Straight home so he could go right to his room. So if your child is struggling, change his or her environment and environmental demands to prevent problem behaviors. We ended up changing his environment from school to home, and it has made a huge difference. And if you've never homeschooled before and it sounds insane and crazy, it's easier. It is actually easier than the remote learning, I found, because with the remote learning, there was the added stress of at a certain time you have to be on to do a certain thing. And for, you know, for my boys, you know, especially my youngest, it wasn't working. And it made a challenge for me. I also have to work from home and I have meetings and phone calls and Zoom calls and things that I have to do. And the, you know, just when we had to do it back in the spring and just when we had to do it the week he was out on a mental health break and there was certain times we just tuned in, it was a crazy schedule. When you homeschool, you set the schedule for what works for your family, for your home. You're not dictated to being online at certain times of the day to do certain things. I mean, if that works for you and for your child and for your family, great. But you may find if you're dealing with the things that I'm talking about here today, that just stepping completely away and homeschooling, and there are a ton of resources for families that homeschool children with special needs, families who are homeschooling kids with FASD specifically. A lot of families, adoptive and foster families who have children with trauma, they're homeschooling because they're finding their kids are much more successful. But I would say you need to pray. You need to seek God on it wholeheartedly, as we learned in our scripture today. And another key point is to listen to your kids. The first 5 years after we adopted our youngest son, he didn't really recognize or express his feelings. He didn't have a voice, so to speak. We had to teach him about feelings and appropriate ways to express them. We had to teach him that he has a voice and that what he has to say matters. And we listen. It took a long time, but now he can express his feelings. So when he tells me, my head can't take this, my soul hurts, I can't keep doing this, it's not because he's lazy or he just doesn't want to go to school or he doesn't feel like doing something. It's not that he won't, it is that he can't. He is verbalizing and expressing his feelings that he's struggling, he's suffering, and he needs help. And as parents, as his parent, and my husband and I, we needed to listen. We need to listen. We have to listen and take our kids seriously. The mental health of our children is vitally important, especially our kids with trauma histories and capital letter syndrome diagnoses. It can be a matter of life and death. Sadly, shockingly, another statistic I learned on the FASD website, which is farther down the line, like I think it's fact number 23, the life expectancy of people with an FASD is 34 years. The bulk of these early deaths are not due to congenital health problems, but suicide, overdose, and accident. We must listen to our kids, pay attention to what they are saying and expressing. Their mental health is vitally important. I cannot state that enough. My youngest has been home 10 years from Ukraine. In fact, we're going to celebrate the 10th anniversary of his Gotcha Day on Thanksgiving 2020, this month. You can check out my personal Facebook page, Sandra Flack, to see some pictures from our adoption trip to Ukraine. They keep popping up in my memories because 10 years ago today, we were in Ukraine for his adoption. His behavior was challenging from day one, the very second they brought him into us. at the orphanage for us to meet him, we knew we were in trouble. We went there thinking, easy peasy, lemon squeezy. The last time we were in Ukraine to adopt, we brought home three kids at one time. They were 3, 7, and 9. How hard could it be to bring home one cute little 5-year-old? Well, he rocked our world. His behavior was challenging. We have learned a lot over the years, over these 10 years. We learned about trauma. We learned TBRI parenting, the connected child, connecting before correcting. And we learned about FASD. And we continue to learn. You're never done learning because there's different ages and stages and seasons. Like, who would have thought we would be in the middle of a pandemic that was just turning our world upside down? We were navigating the challenges fairly well as we were learning, but, you know, life happens, COVID-19 happened, and stress is a huge trigger. So we need to pay attention to our kids. We need to pray wholeheartedly to the Lord and ask him. He will show us what our kids need. You might get a crazy answer like I did, homeschool again, or you might not, but you might. But when we step out in obedience, God is faithful. He knows the plans he has for our kids, plans to prosper them and give them a good future. And he will show us how to parent them for that outcome. So please, my dear listeners, educate yourself. Whatever it is that your child is going through, whether they have a diagnosis or not, whether you suspect one or not. We have done an episode a couple of episodes ago, so I think it's episode 243, where with Laura Passant, where we talked about how you would get diagnosed. You need to reach out to a developmental pediatrician, and there's other ways. It's not just looking at facial features. That was how doctors tended to diagnose FAS years ago. But most of these kids do not exhibit the facial features. So sometimes they do. You know, a couple of mine, they do have the facial features, but not always. Kids don't always have that. As you know, like we said earlier, it's an invisible disability. You can't go by the way a kid looks. The facial features aren't always there, but there are a lot of other telltale signs. So a diagnosis is something that you're going to want to seek out if you suspect one. So especially if you are a foster parent, have adopted from foster care, or adopted internationally, please research FASD. And I highly recommend the FASD Success Podcast. We had Jeff Noble on this show several episodes ago. He hosts that podcast. He is from Canada. He travels, prior to COVID, the world, teaching and doing workshops. And now he's doing a lot of that stuff right online. I've done some of that. I've watched some of his workshops. He's always interviewing caregivers of people with FASD and professionals, people who are changing legislation across the country, people from around the world who are parenting or caring for individuals with FASD. One of the greatest episodes that I listened to was a mom who has two sons who are now in their early 20s. Both of them are out of the house, but she had adopted both of them and they both had the FASD diagnosis. And she talked about that transition from, you know, being a kid to a high schooler to being out of the home. And because I have a 15-year-old and a 17-year-old, that was very relevant to, you know, to our family and to what we'll be facing in the very near future. So I learned some great things. So you learn so much. FASD Hope Podcast. Again, my friend Natalie Vecchione, she is an adoptive mom who has a son diagnosed with FASD. I just listened to an episode of hers. It's the episode for the week the week of October 29th or something. And she interviewed a woman and they specifically talked about homeschooling kids with FASD or and special needs. So I listened to that. I'm checking out the resources that were mentioned because I'm always needing to learn. We are all always needing to learn. There are other podcasts, not just specifically for FASD. Some are for trauma, right? So the Empowered Parent Podcast. I love Ryan and Kayla North. They did the training for my husband and I to become empowered to connect parent trainers. They also homeschool some of their kids. They have workshops and online resources and things as well. Very informative podcast. The Honestly Adoption Podcast with Mike and Kristen Berry. Some of their kids, I believe they homeschool, some are in school. They've got kids with FASD. They've adopted their kids through foster care. And the Positive Adoption Podcast with Kathleen Guire, who was our guest on this show last week. So there's some great resources there. And I highly recommend that you listen, that you learn, you will be encouraged, you will be educated, you will be inspired, and you'll get the help that you need. And of course, there's this podcast, the Orphans Know More podcast. We always want you to tune in here as well. Now, I mentioned a lot of resources, websites, podcasts. So I just want to let you know. And of course, the FASD facts that I shared earlier. I'm going to post all of those resources on the show notes for this episode that you're listening to, as well as the corresponding blog post, which will be on the Justice for Orphans website, which is justicefororphansny.org. And I hope you'll stay tuned for next week's podcast, because my guest will be an adult adoptee diagnosed with FASD. She's married. She has two children, an incredible story. She's written a book. And I'm going to have her on. She actually lives not far from where I live. So we're going to be meeting for coffee also. But you're not going to want to miss this, because especially if you're a foster or adoptive parent and you suspect FASD, or if you've got that diagnosis, if you're parenting a kid and you're, you know, because there was some trauma stuff in her life. She was adopted as a baby. But primarily her differences weren't so much from trauma, but from the FASD. So you're going to want to listen to that episode. But thank you for joining us for episode 245 today. And I'm thrilled to have you along for the journey. If you were inspired by today's show, please subscribe and leave a review, and please share it with your friends on your social media. I really, really appreciate that. And of course, let us know how you were encouraged by listening to this show. We love hearing from you. You can contact us on our website, justicefororphansny.org. You can email me directly at sandraflackjfo@gmail.com, and find us on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans. And check out our website and social media to learn more about our ministry, Justice for Orphans, and our Care Portal ministry. Stay tuned to this podcast and our social media for news about the release of my book. We're almost there. The book is Orphans No More, A Journey Back from the Father, and it is coming soon. So stay tuned. Thank you again for listening. I look forward to being with you next time on Orphans No More.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.